Last year, about 78,000 Maryland students were chronically absent, meaning they missed 18 or more days of school. In Baltimore City, about 4 out of 10 high school students hit that mark. I'm Sheila Cast, and today on Midday, we'll ask why students are missing so many days of class and what is the solution. A Johns Hopkins researcher describes his partnership with the White House to reduce chronic absenteeism by one-tenth. A former Baltimore City principal, now an education advocate, says, quote, students vote with their feet. She tells us what schools in our area are doing to make a difference. And a local principal goes door to door preaching the value of strong attendance. That's Midday after the news. Welcome to Midday. I'm Sheila Cast. If you've got Columbus Day off, I appreciate your sharing part of it with us. And whoever you are, glad you're with us. Today we're going to look at a troubling situation affecting students nationwide, chronic absenteeism. Chronic absenteeism is defined as missing 10% or more of school days in a school year for any reason, both excused and unexcused absences. Last year, about 78,000 Maryland students missed a month or more of school. In Baltimore City, 40.6% of high school students were chronically absent, 4 out of 10. Research from Johns Hopkins estimates that 5 million to 7.5 million students nationwide are chronically absent each year, including 10% of kindergarten and first graders. Being absent early on can create obstacles for students. A University of Chicago study found that preschoolers who were chronically absent had poorer social development and more difficulty mastering academic skills than their peers. We're now a bit over 6 weeks into the school year for most students, an important time for intervention. A study by the Baltimore Education Research Consortium, which is made up of partners from Baltimore City Public Schools, Johns Hopkins University, Morgan State University, and other community groups, found that students K through 12 who missed more than 4 days during the month of September ended up missing an average of 6 to 9 days each month for the rest of the year. Today we'll talk about why so many students aren't making it to class, how chronic absence puts these students at a disadvantage, and how schools can intervene. Later this hour, we'll speak to the principal of Liberty Elementary School about how he and his staff go door to door over the summer to preach the value of strong attendance to parents. But first, joining me in Studio A is Robert Balfonce, a research professor at the Center for the Social Organization of Schools at the Johns Hopkins School of Education. His research is helping shape an initiative by the White House to reduce chronic absenteeism by 10%. Welcome to Midday.
Glad to be here.
And also with us is the director of the Education and Youth Development Program for the Open Society Institute in Baltimore, Karen Weber. The Open Society Institute is a nonprofit that funds place-based projects in Baltimore. Its Baltimore branch focuses on issues surrounding drug addiction and incarceration and helping youth reach educational success. Karen Weber previously was executive director of the Office of School Support and Safety for the Baltimore City Public Schools. She's a former principal of National Academic Foundation School. Thanks for being here.
Delighted to be here.
Robert Balfonce, we're talking about repeated absences, excused and unexcused. Can you give us a snapshot of chronic absenteeism? I mean, who are these students who are missing a month or more of school?
So it's more often than not kids that live in poverty. Chronic absenteeism really tracks the amount and depth of poverty. It's a little bit everywhere, but it's extremely intense in high poverty neighborhoods. So at a national level, we found it's 1 in 10 kids, but that ranges from 1% of kids in an affluent suburb to 40% of kids in Detroit, which is the most impacted city for concentrated poverty in the nation.
And in Baltimore, it's about what, Karen?
In Baltimore, it depends on the grade level, but high school students, for example, are missing 40% of the academic year.
Yeah.
And what we find is that 85% of the students in Baltimore City are at the poverty level on free and reduced meals. So it's concentrated poverty in Baltimore City, which impacts attendance.
Drill down for me what that connection is between poverty and chronic absenteeism.
Yeah, so it's really, you know, we know there's this connection between poverty and school achievement. And it's really through chronic absenteeism that poverty tax plays a big role. And the reason for this is there's three broad buckets why kids don't come to school. Something is keeping you away from school. You have to do sibling care, elder care, work on the side to pay the electric bill, have to go to court for juvenile justice. Something is, if absent that, you would be in school, but it's keeping you out. Another group of reasons is you're avoiding something in school, being teased, being bullied, not feeling safe going to school, not feeling safe in school, and then some more, you know, adolescent stuff that you don't want to be late because you get yelled at for being late. So it's just easier to take the whole day off because less happens missing the whole day than walking in late. Or you didn't get your work done and you don't want to be put on the spot. And then finally, if we're honest about it, when missing school becomes the norm, some kids start calibrating, especially in high school, that I can come just this often and still pass. And there's some discretionary choice involved that they feel like not much is going on in school. They don't feel like they're engaged. They think they can come 4 out of 5 days and pass. And so they try to pull that off. They're often very bad modulators. They often get it wrong, and they often have to repeat the grade and then are on the path to dropping out.
And Sheila, I think that in school, as in everything else, students need to know that they're coming for something. We can incentivize attendance and have students come to school, but what's happening when they get to school? The older the student is, the more likely they are to vote with their feet. If it's a welcoming environment in which they're getting what they need, they come to school and they stay. If it's not, they don't come to school. So the older they get, the more discretion they have as to whether they're coming to school or not. In the younger grades, what we see in pre-K and kindergarten are parents who often think that this is not the most important grade. So students can miss, they can travel, they can do whatever they need to do, and then start coming in earnest in the first grade. But what they find is that they've missed important reading skills, and they're behind already when they start the first grade.
These three categories, these three buckets, Val Fence, that you describe, do they tend to be different at different ages?
I mean, to some extent, but it's part also the challenge that schools face is that once they understand how big their problem is, they have to really start digging down into the why, because it can vary by time and place, and sometimes obvious ways and sometimes less obvious ways. And if you don't know the reason, your intervention can actually make things worse and not better. So if you think if you think a student is coming because they're not motivated enough and they're just taking some days off, you might give them sort of the tough love speech. Your future is really depending on being in school every day. If you're not here every day, you're not going to have much of a future. For a kid that's discretionary absences, that could work. But what if that kid is staying home to take care of his grandma who raised him and feels there's no one else to care for her? That kid actually feels like they're sort of being heroic, and now you've just sort of accused them of not caring, at which point they might turn off from school altogether and say, I'm just going to stay home and help my grandma.
I think one of the points here as well is the fact that there isn't sufficient student voice in the school day. So we're not asking the right questions. When a student is absent, we're often making assumptions. When a student is late, we're making assumptions. And we're not sitting down with that student and finding out what's going on and drilling down into the cause. It's not like it's a big secret. A student will tell you quite willingly that I'm taking my little sister to school every day, or my little sister was sick, or my mother was incarcerated, my dad is incarcerated, my mother has HIV. The list of problems are enormous. And if you sit down and ask what the problems are, then you can attach that student to the services that they need so that they can come to school.
That's Karen Weber of OSI Baltimore here on Midday. I'm Sheila Cass. This is WYPR. Karen is the director of, let me get your title right, Karen, director of the Education and Youth Development Program at Open Society Institute Baltimore. And also with us is Robert Balfonce of the Johns Hopkins School of Education. We're talking about absenteeism, and you can be part of this conversation. You can give us a call at 410-662-8780. If it's long distance for you, we've got a toll-free number, 1-866-661-9309. Or you can send us an email at midday@wypr.org. We'd be interested in your experience with absenteeism. Are you a parent or are you a teacher who faces this? Maybe if it's a holiday and your school system isn't in, maybe you can call us freely because you're actually not absent today, but you may have some thoughts about this. We'd like to hear from you. Karen, when you talk about it's not that hard to figure out that most children will be pretty frank about why they're missing school, who do you envision having that conversation with all these hundreds of kids in the school district that are chronically absent? Who should be doing that?
Well, Sheila, in Baltimore City, every school has an attendance monitor assigned to them. Sometimes the attendance monitor is given a very personable role to speak to children, to speak to families, to ascertain what's happening. Sometimes the role is very automatic, checking boxes, sending out letters, doing automatic checkbox type behaviors. Those are not the kind of behaviors that bring children back to school. And I'm certainly not saying that one attendance monitor should do all the work. Everybody in the school is responsible for the climate in the school. And attendance is part of school climate. Making the school a place where everyone wants to be is part one. And then when people are not there, finding out why is part two. So it's teachers. It's folks who work in the cafeteria. It's the school police officer, if you have one. It's the principal. It's everybody in the school's responsibility. But that has to be messaged. And it hasn't been, and not sufficiently enough to the degree that it has been. It's everyone's responsibility to make that environment welcoming and to make sure that the children are attending. And if they're not, finding out why they're not.
I'm certainly not going to argue that it's everyone's responsibility, but there's also sort of an element of if it's everybody's responsibility, is it anybody in particular responsibility to do that? Bob Alphonse, how do you think it should work?
Well, I think that's a good strategy for many schools. And then for the most impacted schools, where literally it could be 200 kids, we actually have to link that school with community partners that can provide the extra person power, because once a kid is chronically absent, you either have to solve a problem or change a behavior. And you have to have a relationship.
What do you mean by that, change a behavior?
Well, when a kid is chronically absent, the reason is either because it's become a norm, right? They're the ones that are sort of having discretionary days off. They think they can come 4 out of 5 days. Or they're avoiding things, but they're avoiding them unnecessarily. It's like, I don't want any conflict in school. I don't want any, but a little conflict is okay if we give you support. And so you have to change their behavior, how they approach going to school. Or if there's something keeping them out of school, you have to solve that problem. To do either, you have to have a relationship, a positive relationship with the student or the family. And in the highest impact of schools, that's person power. So that's why we have to bring community partners in from AmeriCorps, United Way, other places, to have enough people to form those relationships to change the behavior and solve the problems.
But Sheila, we have to do more than that. We have to let the educators know that their number one job is to create the appropriate climate in the school. Teaching and learning does not take place in a school that's chaotic, in a school where people do not feel like they belong there. So it starts with the educators. And then it can go into partners. But the partners themselves can't do it alone either. But the training has not been there, Sheila. As soon as we can impart to people exactly how they form relationships with students, and it doesn't mean I'm going to be your best friend, but it does mean that first and foremost, I really do care about you, and I do want you here in this seat. And then the education can happen. It can't happen without that.
So you're pointing, it sounds to me like, again, you're saying this is a responsibility on the teacher to have the relationship that lets the teacher know Jimmy tends not to show up for school because of this reason.
This is the responsibility of the entire district, and the messaging has not been there. The messaging has been about instructional leadership. You cannot instruct anyone who is not there. So until we shift our focus and move away from test scores and check boxes and move into a relational capacity with our students are not coming. Now, what we have seen, and I did some data dives when I was in my former role in Baltimore City Schools, those schools that had amazing leaders, like the one you're going to hear from, Joe Manko, their attendance jumped amazingly, just by that leader being in the seat. And what each leader that I spoke to who had this amazing quality said is, I just wanted my kids to be happy during the day. I wanted to set an environment where everyone felt welcome. There are common threads into those schools that have amazing environments. And one of the common things that happens is that suspensions go down, attendance goes up. The other thing I want to speak to is the fact that some of these absences are adult made. If you continue to suspend students who are having behavioral problems in school, you're contributing to chronic absenteeism in our school district.
So that whole question of suspensions is something we should talk about. This is probably a good time to take a quick break because, as Karen Weber of OSI Baltimore mentioned, we are about to be joined by a school principal who has had some success addressing these problems, and Robert Balfonce, a research scientist at the Center for Social Organization of Schools at Johns Hopkins University, is with us. We're going to take a break, give you time to organize your question. You can call us at 410-662-8780 or send us an email at midday@wypr.org. We'll be back in a bit. Stay with us. Welcome back to Midday. I'm Sheila Cast. We're talking about students and schools struggling with chronic absenteeism, missing more than 20 days of school a year. Chronic absenteeism can be an indicator of problems at home or a symptom of student disengagement. It also can lead to more problems. With me in Studio A is Karen Weber, Director of the Education and Youth Development Program for Open Society Institute in Baltimore, and Robert Balfonce, Research Scientist at the Center for Social Organization of Schools at Johns Hopkins University. And joining us now is Joe Manco, principal of Liberty Elementary School near Mondawmin Mall. Liberty Elementary serves pre-K through fifth grade. They have about 460 students enrolled. Welcome.
Thank you so much.
So, first of all, what can you tell us, Joe, about attendance at Liberty Elementary?
Yeah, so...
And maybe you should tell us, like, where things were before you got there and how things have changed and
yeah,
how.
Yeah, so currently I've been at Liberty Elementary for about 6 years. And as time has gone on, we've identified attendance as a persistent problem and something that we needed to tackle and work pretty hard as a team in order to get our kids to school each and every day. So as time has gone on, our attendance rates, both our average daily attendance rate and our chronic absentee rate has improved. You know, I think this is due to a variety of factors, but, you know, as our two other guests were saying, it really is a team effort. Everybody pulling together. We have a lot of good community partners that help us with the work, you know, teachers and all staff members,
so
myself,
tell me,
take responsibility.
Tell me what they do.
I mean, all sorts of things. We this summer, we sent a team out that went door to door to a lot of our students that were chronically absent. Last year, we had gone through and done the numbers, and we had pulled the names of all those students and the addresses, and we made sure we went door to door, and we just, you know, talked to them about welcoming them back to the school year, talking about some of the resources. Talk to the students and their parents.
And their parents.
And talked about the resources that we have available as a school and the importance of attendance, and that we were looking forward to seeing them each and every day this year. And so far, our attendance rate has been a lot better. Our chronic rate is down this year in comparison to years past. Now, I think this is one strategy that we used amongst many, but you know, I think the door-to-door approach, the, you know, really getting to know kids and getting to know each individual situation and coming up with interventions that support that particular family, I think that's been, you know, a really, really important part of our strategy.
Let me make sure I understand. So the teams that were going door to door, I mean, would a teacher who is going to have that child in class next year, is that teacher spent the summer going door to door, or others in the school? Or I'm trying to get a real clear sense of who is forming, building that relationship.
Yeah. So in some cases that happened. We have a wonderful partnership with the Child First Authority, and through them we have a community schools coordinator. We're one of the community schools partners. And our community school coordinator went through, identified all the students who were chronically absent last year, our most challenging cases, and then went through and started mapping out different addresses. We, you know, basically MapQuested kind of a regional strategy so that teachers could go out from house to house, and they wouldn't have to travel long distances. So, you know, in some cases, the first grade teachers that went out would go through and they'd talk to students who were going to be in their class next year. In other cases, it was just students who were in the school that had, you know, persistent absentee issues in previous years that we needed to touch base with, and we needed to, you know, let them know they were welcome to the school, and we wanted them to be there every day.
And how much of an impact are you seeing from that? Or is it just too early to be clear?
It's still a little early, and I have to tell you, like, the weather this year has been really good, and I think that's been one of our biggest challenges. On days when it rains, our attendance just really drops. It's really hard to get kids to school when the weather is very, very poor. But the weather has been fortunately
good. See, I thought it worked the other way. I thought kids would play hooky when the weather's great. Yeah.
I mean, you know, we have it's an elementary school, and I think, you know, part of our challenge is so many of our kids walk, and it's, you know, it's hard when you're walking a mile in the rain and, you know, you might not have an umbrella, or you might not have a raincoat, and, you know, to get kids to school at the correct time, you know, I think is a challenge for a lot of our families when they have a lot of other responsibilities at home. But, you know, thus far this year, it's been, you know, we've gotten the help of the weather, and we've gotten the help of a lot of these kind of, you know, strategic approaches. And we have, you know, our ARCA rate would be students that have at this point more than four absences, and at this point we're at 4% of our students, which is a big triumph for our community.
We have some callers holding in. I will get to you in a minute, and I will want to invite others who want to be part of this conversation to give us a call at 410-662-8780 or send us an email at midday@wypr.org. But first, I want to pick up on a phrase that you used, Joe Manco, and ask Robert Belfonse about it. Joe began by saying, "We identified attendance as a persistent problem." Is Liberty Elementary unusual in making that identification?
They are, because it's Maryland has been one of the few states that's been measuring chronic absenteeism for a while. But actually, they were only one of eight states we found that measure it. In most parts of the nation, people couldn't tell you what their chronic absenteeism rate is, because what we measure is average daily attendance, which is how many kids are in the building every day on average. But And it throws people off course, because it's a situation where you could have 90% average daily attendance and have a quarter of your kids missing a month or more of school, because it's different kids on different days making that 90%. So in much of the country, this is a serious issue that people are not even fully aware of, because we don't measure chronic absenteeism. We only measure average daily attendance.
So, Joe, how was it that you talked about both? You talked about average daily attendance, but you zoomed in also on chronic absence, the kids who are absent over and over and over again. How did that present itself to you? Why did you focus on that?
This has been a big focus of Baltimore City Schools really over the past 3 or 4 years. We have wonderful partners in this work, Attendance Works, the Baltimore Attendance Collaborative, OSI, a lot of different partners that, you know, really kind of raised the profile of chronic absenteeism as being, you know, one of our biggest challenges, because, you know, I think Dr. Belfonse is right. So often that the chronic rate is masked by average daily attendance. And you look at a school that has 96-97% average daily attendance, and it looks like you're great. But the reality is your most vulnerable kids are often the ones that are missing the most school. And, you know, it just becomes really, really hard academically to get any traction with them if they're missing, you know, 20-25 days.
I'd like to pull Curtis from Northwest Baltimore into this conversation. Curtis is a graduate of Douglas High, but apparently he cut school all the time when he was in school. Curtis, welcome to Midday.
Good afternoon. Thank you for taking my call.
Sure.
I wanted to say there's a couple of things that I noticed at Douglas High School, and that could apply to many schools.
And you were there when? During what?
I went there from 1995, and I graduated in 1999. Mm-hmm. Now, in my case, when I went there, we still had the high-rises downtown. One of the things that happened was that it was a chaotic environment the first week of school. 300 ninth graders were suspended. And a part of that was due to the fact that they all came from these different neighborhoods all over the city. Everyone could get to Mondawmin because of the transportation with the buses and the subway. And we had violent altercations between different neighborhoods. I was from none of those neighborhoods, and I didn't feel comfortable going there. Some of the students that I knew that were going to Douglas were living in houses and raising themselves. They didn't have gas and electric. They didn't have water. they were just taking care of themselves, and they were in full survival mode. The last thing on their mind was school. Now, in my case, I was raised in a Christian household. My parents are ministers and so on, but I was a, I guess you could say, kind of a child prodigy musician. I knew what I was going to do with my life by the age of 13, which I still do at the age of 34. And I felt like going to school was not helping me towards my end when I already started making money at 14, the same way I'm making money to support myself and my family right now. So I felt like going to school was holding me back when it wasn't geared toward what I already had in my mind for the vision for my life. And I was already, some people may not agree with it, but I was already a professional musician at 14. And I would cut school and study the business that I was interested in pursuing further in my life. And that's what takes care of me today. I traveled all over the country playing music. I've lived a blessed life from, you know, my focus and my intent to that. It wasn't that I thought school was bad. It just wasn't my primary focus when I was already making money.
And if Douglas High School had had a great music program, would that have made a difference in your decision about how much to attend?
Yes, but I was kind of already past, you know, I was performing professionally at 14.
Okay. Karen Weber, this seems to go, Curtis's experience seems to go to what you were talking about. It's tough to compete, for a school to compete with a vision that a young person has of how they can better be preparing themselves for the life they envision for themselves.
Absolutely. I think that one of the things Open Society Institute has invested in is this notion of a high-value high school, and we're actually investing in that at Douglas. So a student who feels that they need to be out there, in his case, he was lucky enough to have such amazing skills, and he was a musician. But there are other students who feel like they need to be in the workforce. And in the high-value high schools, the idea is to accelerate the student so that they can get their diploma because they'll need it later. You never know when you're going to need that fallback. To accelerate the student's progress so that they can get their high school diploma and also meet the other needs that they have in their lives. There are those students who are working because they have to, not because they happen to have this talent, but they literally have to work. So what are we doing about those students? We're making them conform to our rules and regs that say you're here from 8 to 3, when in fact they may need a different schedule. So at Douglas, for example, they have a staggered entry period. So a student can come later in the day, can take less classes, can take classes over the summer. The idea is to have the high school meet the new needs of the student.
Curtis, one quick question before I let you go. Was it a close question for you? Oh, Curtis is gone. I'm sorry. I was wondering whether it was a close question, whether he graduated, whether as much as he cut, whether he had a hard time graduating. James from Northwest Baltimore has a different point to make about attendance. Hello,
Good
James.
Good afternoon, and thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
I'm an education advocate, and I talk to a lot of students about attendance, and one of the things that a lot of people aren't aware of is there's a policy in the school system called the promotion retention policy, and it's supposed to address students who have had multiple retentions, and it's supposed to put a plan in place at the beginning of every school year to assist these students, and there's no one overseeing this and taking data in so that those children who need help academically can don't feel like they're left swimming in a giant ocean and nobody's throwing them a lifeline. And a lot of children tell me that they don't have anybody to help them once they reach the higher grades, the elementary school grades. I actually graduated from Libby Elementary in 1973, so that's pretty ironic. But one of the things that a lot of students talk to me about is that nobody's helping them. By the time they get to high school level, and then they're so disenfranchised with being left out alone and nobody helping them that not only do they not attend, but they eventually drop out of school. So there has to be oversight of the school system to make sure that they do the things that the policy say they're going to do. And right now, presently, they don't.
James, since you're a Liberty graduate, let me ask Joe Manko to respond to the situation that James raises.
Yeah, first off, thanks so much for calling in, James, and I'm so excited that we have a Liberty connection. I think that this is a multifaceted problem, and it has to do with forming relationships with families, but it also has to do with making school a positive and welcoming place, and that means going through, and if there are kids that are struggling academically, you know, rather than going through and just making a blanket statement, we're going to go through and retain every child who is struggling, going through and providing interventions and supports, and identifying what needs are, and providing that help to either students or to their families. I also think it's about, you know, Ms. Weber-Endor talked before about making school a welcoming place and allowing kids to feel successful. You know, if they're in a place where academically they're not meeting with success, there's opportunities for them to meet with success in other places, whether it be, you know, as Curtis was talking about, through a music program or through some kind of extracurricular activity. I think, you know, this is a missed opportunity that we don't have, you know, as robust a set of supports in a lot of the schools, in a lot of different activities that kids can go and feel successful in. Because for a lot of kids, you know, they might struggle with reading or math, but if they can go to school and they have a technology program that they're, you know, really engaged with and that they're passionate about, that can be a way to hook them in, to get them into Schoology and every day.
Leslie is calling us from Annapolis, lest we think that this is only a problem in Baltimore, in Maryland. Leslie, what's on your mind?
Yes, thank you for taking my call. I'm really enjoying this conversation. I was a teacher for 20 years, and I ended my teaching career in Anne Arundel County, where I served as a translator. I don't know if you're aware, but Anne Arundel County is facing a huge influx of immigrants into the schools. And I think that is also affecting the numbers as far as chronic absenteeism, because a lot of the families, these children come from families that really don't have experience with school and don't really understand the value of school. Most of our students came from El Salvador, and we found that a lot of the parents have never gone to school and don't really have the vocabulary to express to their children the importance of an education. Rather, they really see their kids as, you know, they'll go to school because they have to by law. But when the child reaches an age where he can get a job, whether it's washing dishes or landscaping, they're going to pull them out of school and have them work, because making money is the priority, not so much getting an education. And I'm not saying that it's the case for all immigrants, but what I found as a translator and visiting families because of chronic absenteeism, I would attend these meetings with the families with the social worker, because the child would often miss school, and many of the reasons they would miss school would be because they didn't feel like it, they were tired, you know, they just didn't see the value in going to school.
And I appreciate your call. I also appreciate your pointing out this isn't true of all immigrants. Let me look at our panelists here and ask what any of you have an experience that sheds some more light on this.
Yeah, this is I think actually all three calls were good examples of the need for schools to have this outreach, which is a different role for schools. I mean, schools, traditionally, we teach the kids who come. And if you can't get yourself to school, that's like on you and your parents, not on us. But in this era where like everyone's got to graduate high school to have a shot at a job that supports a family, schools have got to adopt more of an outreach thing. And in this case, with immigrant families, yes, it's often the case they don't quite understand the power and of consecutive attendance. But in many cases, when programs are developed to have outreach to those families to explain that and to develop a direct connection with them, we see them having a different view and working much more focused way to keep their kids in school on a regular basis. And in the prior case, it just showed you that so many of our kids in poverty and adolescence are raising themselves. And if we don't have this idea of a person in school that makes that connection for them, we some of this work has to be done retail. It can't be done wholesale. And we got to figure out how to have that one-to-one approach for the kids that are raising themselves, or the parents that are so disconnected from the norms of a new society, that absent somebody making that bridge, they're not going to make it themselves.
We're going to take another quick break here. Let me report first that Curtis, our musician friend, called us back and said he actually graduated early from Douglas High School because his principal worked with him. So it sounds like exactly the kind of personal connection that Bob Alphonse from Johns Hopkins University was just describing to us. Karen Weber, Director of Education Youth Development at OSI Baltimore, is also with us. Joe Manko, principal of Liberty Heights Elementary School. And we would like to hear from you. Are you a teacher facing empty seats in your classroom? Are you parents of a student who's been absent frequently? Were you chronically absent growing up? Any of this, give us a call, 410-662-8780, or toll-free, long distance, 866-661-9309, or send us an email at midday@wypr.org. We'll be back in just a bit. Stay with us. Welcome back to Midday. I'm Sheila Cast. With me in Studio A are Karen Weber, Director of the Education and Youth Development Program for Open Society Institute in Baltimore, Robert Balfonce, Research Scientist at the Center for Social Organization of Schools at Johns Hopkins University, and Joe Manko, Principal of Liberty Heights Elementary School near Mondawmin Mall in Baltimore. We are talking about chronic absenteeism, a term that that covers students who miss about 10% of the school year. Let me ask you first, Joe, as a teacher, and Karen, you've also been both a teacher and a principal. How does a teacher deal with the question of, okay, I've got basically certain percentage of my kids are absent almost every day. I've got kind of a different set of kids in front of me in class every day. Do I begin each class doing a review of what we covered recently, knowing that I'm going to bore the kids who actually were there for that when I covered it the first time? Or do I move ahead with my class plan and expect those kids who were out to catch up somehow, knowing that some of them won't? How does a teacher solve that?
So, you know, some of this is maybe some peculiarities of, Liberty in the way that we approach instruction, but so much of what we've done now is moved, you know, throughout the day to small grouping. If kids are missing, they're going to get assessed on, you know, a regular basis, and they'll go through and they'll be integrated into an additional group. So, you know, at least at our school these days of like, you know, we've gone through, taught the whole group lesson, and you missed the lesson, so now you're behind. I think we've been able to mitigate that a little bit by the way that we're approaching data and the way that we're pulling small groups on a daily basis. But, you know, I think that's probably still not the norm for a lot of schools across the country. I think, there's still this kind of like, you know, the teacher's the sage on the stage as opposed to student-centered classrooms and in project-based learning and a lot of hands-on stuff that I think we're trying to implement at Liberty.
So you're saying this big conflict, either or question that I pose, is not really the way what a teacher is functioning with, is a choice between one or the other.
I think in schools where there's more systems for intervention and there's more small grouping, it becomes less of a problem. But you know, the reality is, it's hard at any point if you have a different set of kids that are in front of you every day, and especially when, you know, you have a handful of kids that have missed multiple days. You know, it's so hard to go through and catch them up, and regardless of what kind of interventions we can put in place and how fantastic the educator is I can put in front of that child every day. Like, if the reality is you've just missed so much time, and it's really hard to catch you up.
Jessica from Baltimore is calling us about her situation. Welcome to Midday, Jessica.
Yes, hi. I was actually chronically absent from high school and college and due to a chronic illness, and it was really hard for me to catch up. My teachers expected me to get things from other students instead of making time to help me themselves, and the other students weren't really willing and knowledgeable enough to help me out with those things. And I wasn't really, I almost didn't graduate high school. I was, you
summer school when I really needed to rest and recuperate my health during the summer. You know, I tried my best, but it just the system isn't built for people who can't make it to school for one reason or another in order to help them.
How long ago were you in high school?
About 10 years ago. And I'm still having problems in college, to be honest. It's been taking me about a decade to graduate college. I'm set to graduate this year.
Well, congratulations on your graduation. Let me ask folks with me here in the studio, what about that? Somebody with a chronic illness, is there some way? But still, as Joe Manko was pointing out, you miss the work. How do you keep a student current?
Well, happily in Baltimore City, they do have a program called Home and Hospitals, so that if a student is chronically ill or seriously ill, they can get a tutor, actually, to teach them and keep them up to date on their work. But more problematic is the student who, for example, has periodic asthma, who may miss 20 days altogether and still have fallen behind, but really doesn't qualify to be in the home and hospitals program, if you know what I mean. And so many of our students have illnesses that recur. It becomes yet another problem, lending itself to absenteeism.
We got an email from Flo, who points out, as Curtis mentioned, that in Baltimore City, it doesn't run its own yellow school buses. It relies on the public bus system for transportation. And Flo asks, please ask to what extent this contributes to chronic tardiness and absenteeism, and if there's a significant impact, what is being done to remediate the problem? Joe, I'm going to throw that at you since you're currently a principal.
Yeah. So we're an elementary school, and it's a traditional public school, so it's a zoned public school. All of the kids that go to the school, for the most part, live within a one-mile radius of the school. So they walk, and they're not provided with yellow bus transportation or MTA tickets. You know, but I think this question is probably more directed to the middle school and the high school students who do rely on the MTA in order to get to school each and every day.
Yeah, I mean, nationally, it's recognized as a big challenge that many of our cities using mass transportation was not ever designed to get kids from their homes to school. It was designed for all the other needs of the community in mass transportation, and the kids just have to do the best they can, and they often have to do transfers. And those transfers, the buses can be full, the buses can be late. If it's out in the weather, the kids are exposed, and then they end up getting late to school and often getting sanctioned for being late, which often and kids will say, it's better for me to miss the whole day than to face that sanction that wasn't my fault because I had to get two bus connections and they weren't on time.
That's Robert Belfonce, research professor at the Center for the Social Organization of Schools at the Johns Hopkins School of Education here on Midday. I'm Sheila Cast. Also with us is Karen Weber, Director of Education and Youth Development for the Open Society Institute in Baltimore. And Joe Manko, principal of Liberty Elementary, is here with us. Dan raises a question that I confess I hadn't been on the front of my mind. Dan, welcome to Midday.
Hi, thank you. I have a question if there's like a correlation between chronic absenteeism and the educational law that we have, such as the no kids left behind, recesses, and even like the food being served in the cafeteria.
I'm sorry, I'm missing the cafeteria connection.
The food being served in the cafeteria or not being served,
served. Oh, you're saying wasted food, food that is prepared on the assumption that children will be there and it's not. But also your question about law, I'm looking around here and I'm going to throw it at Robert Belfonce, who's looking very thoughtful. I mean, kids somehow mostly get passed along with all these chronic absences on their record. Is there any legal aspect to that? It would vary, of course, by state.
Yeah, I mean, it's state laws, but all states have truancy laws where that after so many unexcused absences, students can be brought to court. And it really varies how proactive they are. And also, being proactive is not always a good solution. For example, in Dallas, they set up a system where it was all automated. You would miss so many days, you would get a summons. If you didn't show up for the summons, kids were pulled out of class and arrested. And it became a money-making scheme for the county. the laws vary and they can be helpful or not.
We got an email from Jim in Elkton who said, my son's attended and graduated from the Cecil County Public School System. The use of school suspension as a form of discipline adds to the problem of absenteeism. Problem kids are suspended and fall further behind and often wind up dropping out. And Karen, you're nodding. I don't know whether that matches your own observation, but to me, it's a dilemma. Should schools just stop suspending students? Because it of course sends the message that attendance is at a minimum negotiable and maybe not very valuable if it's the first thing that we dispense when a child is causing problems in school.
Happily, the state of Maryland has looked very deeply into the issue of suspension across the state. Baltimore City has as well. Over the last 10 years, we've seen more than a 60% drop in the use of out-of-school suspensions in Baltimore City, but it's been very intentional. Changes in the code of conduct and the like. Open Society Institute was very involved in that push as well. What I say about suspensions is that that's an adult-made occurrence of chronic absenteeism. Why are we contributing to chronic absenteeism? There are alternatives to suspension that are more effective than suspension. In some instances, a child is suspended and they're not even sure what the parameters of the suspension are, how long they're going to be out, exactly why they were suspended. Two people could have been involved in an altercation. One was the victim. The victim is suspended too. There's no discussion happening, and students are not brought to their peers to try to reconcile and be brought back into the community. Restorative practices and other practices that bring closure to a problem that's happened in the community is a much more effective way to handle student behaviors and altercations than just sending a kid home.
That's Karen Weber of OSI Baltimore here on Midday. Also with us is Joe Manco, principal of Liberty Heights Elementary School in Baltimore, and Robert Balfonce, research scientist at the Center for Social Organization of Schools at Johns Hopkins University. We have just a few minutes left, and I want you to tell us, Bob Balfonce, what you are doing with the White House on this issue.
Yes, it's the federal government last week launched a national campaign to reduce chronic absenteeism. And a unique feature of this is that it's a joint effort of the Secretary of Education, the Secretary of Health, the Secretary of Housing, the Attorney General, and the White House, because they recognize that while schools have got to be the center of the solution, that schools alone can't do it. We've talked about housing, we've talked about health, we've talked about transportation. The belief is you need an interagency approach. And the hope is by having the Fed say, down to all their agencies, local health agencies, local housing agencies, we think that it's important that you try to address chronic absenteeism in your community. They can help jumpstart a national movement to both reduce it and then set up a way to share best practices across communities so they can learn from each other.
So this is already underway.
Yes, it was launched
last
week.
When do you expect to see some kind of results from it?
Well, what they're hoping to do is to get some good impact this year, because the other triggering event is in May. For the first time, they're going to release data on the chronic absenteeism rate of every school in America. And in most places that haven't measured chronic absenteeism, they're going to be very surprised by how big it is in many places. And instead of just saying, oh, we got you, here's some more bad data, they're trying really hard to have a year's worth of work ahead of time to build up a data bank of solutions and strategies and building these interagency collaborations to
Good
make
luck.
It a team effort.
Good luck. I want to thank you all. Bob Balfonce from the School of Education at Johns Hopkins University, Karen Weber, Director of Education and Youth Development Program at Open Society Institute Baltimore, Joe Manco, principal of Liberty Heights Elementary School near Mondawmin Mall in Baltimore. And thank you to the Diz for supplying lunch today for Midday. The Diz is located at 300 West 30th Street in the heart of Remington. Features signature burgers, wings, steaks, jumbo lump crab cakes. Open for lunch and dinner with breakfast on weekends. On the web at thedizbaltimore.com. Up next, stay tuned for Here and Now. And tomorrow, Democratic Congresswoman and senatorial candidate Donna Edwards. Hope you'll be with us for that. I'm Sheila Cast.